Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks. Sorry for the late start. This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, this is the Tornado, Tony Pennycal. Let me announce, I have two good legs.
And I'm coming at you with a little bit of an injury this week. Just got back from a trip to New Hampshire where I was trying to do too much at once, I guess, and being a rugged mountain man. And picking up where I left off up there at my dad's place, it had become so overgrown, I decided to become a lumberjack one day, and I didn't realize you need a degree for that, so I failed the test on about the sixth tree. I jumped off a stump and broke my ankle, or sprained it severely, as we were talking about before we get on the air tonight. So I was just finishing explaining to Tony that that means we're going to be putting a lot of work into the site and making some new partnerships, doing some new exciting things, and maybe next week we're going to be having this show in a premium format. Sponsor that will support that. So if you're interested, hit us up at info@unlimitedfightnews.com. And we're going to work the guests too. We have Tyler Breeze tonight, who is a sponsored fighter of discipline.com, DISSIPLINE.com. And we're going to try calling the Haitian sensation there, Daniel Edouard, a boxer as well. He's supposed to be scheduled for the 8:30 hour. So we're going to try to call him, but I haven't heard back from him today. When I tried calling him a couple times, I'm not sure if he's going to come through for us, but, you know, we'll keep him in the works. I know Tony likes those boxing guests.
That's right. Like I said, I don't know Daniel Edouard personally, but I kind of know him through osmosis. One of the guys that he beat on ESPN back in 2004, well, trained at the same gym with me, Willie the Gladiator Gibbs. We and I sparred, it was back around 2000, 2001. Yeah, Willie and I trained together for a little bit, and it was a great fight. It was like the ESPN Fight of the Year, and Willie had Daniel hurt, and Daniel had Willie hurt, and then Willie didn't. Daniel recovered, Willie didn't. It was like a Rocky Balboa Apollo Creed fight, but I guess in the end, Daniel ended up playing the part of Rocky, and I guess Rocky too. Winning, you know, stopping Willie, I think it was like four or five rounds. It was a good fight. And I wanted to talk to him a little bit about that. So hopefully we get a chance to talk to him. I got a few things I want to bring up before we really, really get into the show tonight. First of all, Rich, I want to go back to your ankle. Because you know I have a degree in medicine.
Oh, really?
A self-proclaimed degree in medicine, but a degree in medicine nonetheless. And, Rich, I think you're dealing with a sprain here. And the reason I say that is a number of years ago when I first moved up to where I'm living now, didn't really know anybody, and I would go out jogging every morning on the street, which in hindsight wasn't that wise because it's a narrow street and I see about four or five accidents on it every year for a small suburban street because people speed. But I didn't know any better, so I didn't jog down the street. I was about a mile or so from home one day, and I was rocking out to Living in America by James Brown. And I took a bad step, and I
heard this story.
Turned my what?
I think I heard this story, but go on.
Yeah, turned my ankle so damn bad that I heard it crack over the sound of Living in America. So I was like, shit, now I'm like, I don't have a way to get home. I don't have a phone on me. I don't know any pay phones here. It's the middle of it's like Labor Day weekend. It's like 90 degrees out, and I'm like, I'm in a black hooded sweatshirt and black sweatpants and a winter hat. I don't think anybody's going to answer the door for me. So I had to hobble home. And what you were saying about your ankle, you're saying, like, you know, it's really swollen and dark. Mine was about the size of my calf. And it was, you know, swollen badly, and it was deep purple. We ended up, I just broke out my old crutches from knee surgery. Went on crutches for about a week. And after that, like, the doctor said I should have stayed on the crutches for about 3 weeks, but I didn't have that patience. And but it only ended, there was no break. They did the x-rays. There was no break at all. Here's what you got to do. Then when did you do this?
Last week.
Last week. You didn't call the doctor until now.
No, I never called the doctor. Period.
Well, yeah, but I'm not talking about one of them MDs. They don't know anything.
Oh, you're
call a real doctor. Call a real doctor. Call me. Okay. Here's I'm going to give you the steps on what you got to do.
I'm going to give you
Well, you don't need a prescription. That's for weakness. Now, the first question is obvious. Have you iced it at least?
Yes, actually, I have a cryo cup.
Okay, that's good. Have you put any type of, like, brace on it or something like that?
Yeah, I pretty much kept the last few days, I kept the cryo cup on there, full blast. I put block ice in it, and you know, had it as cold as ever yesterday for the whole day. And it's like a brace in itself once it's full of water.
Okay. So yeah, you need some type of support on that. Now the third one, this comes from old herbal medicine. Now we used to actually make this ourselves. Have you ever heard of something called arnica?
No.
Okay. Arnica is a berry, and you can't take it internally because it's poisonous, and you can never put it on an open wound. But arnica, what you do is, it's specifically for, you know, fighting off bruises, sprains, things like that. Years ago, when we first found out about it in an herbal book, my dad used to go to an herbal store and actually get the berries, and he would actually boil them and strain them. Then he would get, like, one of those Vaseline intensive fairs with a cream-based product, and he would actually make a cream out of it, which is really amazing. But we were down the gym one time. I was sore with my trainer, and he went to throw a right hook around to the body, and I stuck my elbow right into his forearm, and his whole forearm turned black and blue within a day. We put that arnica on him, and within a day it was healed. Now, with a severely strained ankle...
Thanks to that, whatever that is.
Arnica? Now, I mean, if you go to, like, a GNC now, you can buy, like, an arnica cream. It's not as good as the shit that we used to make. And for a severely sprained ankle, it's not going to be healed in one day, you know. Sorry to break that to you, but it will definitely help you out. So look into that. Now, and other things, like, you're telling me about this, you know, lumberjacking you're doing. I'm getting all impressed. Like, oh, shit. Rich is, like, taking a page out of Joe Lewis and Rocky Marciano and George Foreman, those guys just chopping down trees, like going out like Rocky IV in the Siberian wilderness,
oh, man,
chopping down trees.
Because George Foreman, I can remember him in his comeback. They were showing it to him with the axe.
With a big axe and a big flannel shirt.
The reason why I probably got myself into that situation is because we didn't bring the axe that far down the hill. Because one of the previous trees we were cutting down, me and my dad up at my dad's place in New Hampshire. One of the previous trees we were cutting down, the blade got stuck there, and I was trying to wedge the tree out, and what worked was the axe. You know, we had to swing the axe a few times, and we got it out of there. So, you know, it's been so long since I even freaking used the chainsaw. You know, I've forgotten how you're supposed to do it and all that stuff, so it was like a learning curve. And, you know, about the sixth tree in, like I say, all this happened, and it just goes to show you have to slow down when you're dealing with that type of stuff, and let the trees fall where they may.
I said, like, because I was all impressed.
And looking back, it's like, why was I in such a hurry, number one, and why was I so concerned about, you know, getting the tree off the stump? I should have just left it there and gone on to the next one. You know? But anyway,
I thought you were doing, like, some Rocky Balboa shit there, man. I was, like, all impressed. They were like, yeah, I was chopping down a chainsaw. My chainsaw, we're going to work out of that.
Well, that was the thing, you know. The whole week I was up there in New Hampshire, I was water skiing. I was, I was doing mountain biking from my friend's house to my dad's house. I was just going nuts, you know, doing everything that I could possibly do physically. We climbed a mountain the first day we were up there, and, you know, I ran halfway up the thing trying to be a tough guy all the way down. So I lost 10 pounds. I was under 200 pounds before the ankle break, and now I'm back to my regular old 210. And so I'm going to have to start putting the sauna suit on and just doing sit-ups and push-ups so I can at least work on something, you know, my upper body or whatever, and just, you know, give the ankle a rest and do some creative stuff. But I'm not going to let it slow me down anyway. And I already feel some extra strength to move around on the crutches. We'll see. What it does, it'll definitely help me. The bone will hear stronger if it's broken. And if it's not, you know, hopefully it's, you know, there's no tendon tears or anything I have to worry about.
Well, the other thing that you're going to miss for this weekend, any Anybody in my Philadelphia area that has nothing to do on the 4th of July weekend, you're going to love this, Rich. Go to Horsham, Pennsylvania. Look up on Google if you have to. It's right outside the city. Go to Horsham, Pennsylvania. There's a church carnival. It's a good function. It's for the church. So all my good Christians out there should go support the church. And it's a carnival. Well, they're bringing back their greatest performer ever. The most obnoxious dunk tank person I've ever seen in my entire life is coming back. He will be dressed as Uncle Sam in the tank, and we all know him and we all love him as the Tornado.
Well, after a week off, I figured you'd be rip-roaring go, so I'm glad that you're so excited about doing the show last week that you were disappointed that you weren't doing it, number one. I want to give you great thanks for the enthusiasm. I do apologize for everybody who was tuned in and tried to listen last week and got dead air.
But then, man, you were in trouble. You were in trouble. And the, groupie, the little Tasmanian devil, was pissed off. She threatened to beat you up. And I was like, well, now after I find out what you do by yourself, chopping down trees and shit and killing yourself without any help, the little Tasmanian devil doesn't have to worry about it.
Well, in the long run, I think, it'll all work itself out. And one good thing, the whole thing is, by accident, I upgraded the WordPress blog the other day, and we had a catastrophe for a couple of days. The blog was in limbo, and this whole thing has led me now to change hosts. We're now with HostGator.com. We gave Earthlink the boot, and I had some violent phone calls with the customer service people there. And I basically told them that I want only communication in writing, and if it has anything to do with billing, it's not getting paid.
What? Guys.
Billing's tough. Over and out. And we'll see. Apparently, I've heard since then they've got the problem fixed, but I spent that whole entire day trying to fix my website, not knowing that it was Earthlink's problem. So, you can imagine the frustration, number one, and I know for a fact it affected the traffic because I checked the numbers and we had 85,000 hits on the website on the 26th of June, and I think by the 28th we were down to like 36,000 because of it, so definitely a big problem to deal with, and we got it fixed, and the guys over at c3mdigital.com helped us out and got us hooked back up, and on pretty good terms, so... the best part is we have what's it's called the transfer limit or a bandwidth limit of 500 gigabytes, which, as you can imagine, if you know anything about computers, is quite a lot of space and transfer limit. So that gives us plenty of reasons to promote the site, and we will never go over the limit and have to pay the huge fees we would have to pay with Earthlink for over the price we're paying now, and we can have unlimited domains on this one server now. So it's just nothing but growth now that we can shoot for. I mean, I can actually save a lot of money by getting rid of a lot of my hosting that I do through other companies now and throwing them on that server. And it's like the mother of all servers for a good price. So we'll work with that and we'll improve the site. We'll go from there. But one thing that I did want to talk about was the fights that I haven't put online yet. And, of course, Rich at Tenido won his fight against Jamie Yeager in the Ultimate Fighter finale. So I wanted to mention that, of course. Court McGee was the one who won it all. I believe it was a rear naked choke and ended it all there. But just wanted to give a heads up on that. It's been a while. And a lot of things have gone on. The fight's up at Meadowbrook Musical Arts Center up there in New Hampshire, which I went up to New Hampshire for and ended up on an extended stay for a week and a half, were actually kind of boring, I have to say. I mean, even as a mixed martial arts fan, I felt like the matchmaking was too good, especially for the pro fights. There were six pro fights, and I think every one of them but the last one went the distance. I have so much footage that it's going to take me 3 days to download it to the computer and then to put it on YouTube. So bear with us, and you'll see all those fights that I got on tape. Most of the action that whole night is all on tape in some format. You know, it might be bad. A couple of them. I had to switch the camera off a few times. I don't know how good my videographer was when I wasn't there. But anyway, we're gonna have them all put together by maybe end of next week for sure. And it was a unique environment. I'm not sure whether the Lakes region is ready for mixed martial arts. I think a lot of older people showed up, and there was a huge crowd at the beginning, but as the night went on, and I mentioned Rear Naked Choke that the Ultimate Fighter ended on, which was going on the same night. That finale was actually being broadcast the same night and the same time as this event was going on. And the Rear Naked Choke was like the number one submission. Almost all the preliminary fights ended by Rear Naked Choke. I think there were like 6 out of 9 fights ended by Rear Naked Choke. So it was kind of interesting that, you know, that move has become such a bread and butter move, and, you know, was being used so much that night. Like, it was like one guy was just saying to the next guy, I got my guy with a rear naked choke, you should try that. And boom, it just kept happening. And actually, the guy that put on one of the most exciting performances was a guy we had on the show a few months ago now, I want to say, is, why am I drawing a blank? Calvin Guitar, there we go, who just went after his guy, and it was the main event of the night. And unfortunately, so many people had left already that, you know, they didn't get to see the best fight of the night, I believe, which was this one. And he just kind of stalked this guy across the ring and beat him senseless and got the knockout after, like, at least 5 out of 6 of the other fights went to a decision. So, and the fight before that, the guy, it was a madhouse. I mean, the guy, I think he got kicked in the nuts or something like that, and they stopped the fight, and then a big, huge bug bit him in the legs. He's bleeding all over the freaking mat, and they had to mop up the mat. I mean, it was kind of a unique thing to be having a fight outdoors. And he swatted a mosquito, like, right before the fight even started, and then another one bit him during the the downtime. So one thing that any promoter doing an outdoor show should think about, and especially in summertime, is you know, some kind of bug barrier for the cage. But anyway, all the fights were good, even though they were so evenly matched, they went on forever. You know, people that were really true MMA fans got to see a great show. And there was a lot of interesting fighters, a lot of up-and-coming people. And I think that the people that came there looking for violence and craziness and brutality were kind of, you know, hit in the stomach, and they ended up thinking, wow, this isn't so bad. This is like wrestling. And they got that impression that it's not that exciting, brutal, nut sport, you know. So in some ways it was good, in some ways it was bad, because you got a great show and a great environment, but only the true fans of the sport can really appreciate a lot of it. You know, you got people that you're trying to bring on and add to the fan base, and you bring them to a show like that, and they kind of get turned off because they don't see the blood and guts and the beatdowns and the knockouts and that sort of thing that they're expecting. So they kind of go away disappointed, or they just go away, period, which a lot of people did, unfortunately. But, you know, those fans that did want to see it and came out from the local area and never seen it before and could appreciate it, you know, got a great show. So we'll definitely keep supporting those guys and keep an eye on Calvin, of course. He's going to be moving up the ranks and doing better. And we also happened to miss the last Cage FX show, so we're going to have to catch up on that. During last Saturday, we actually had a big, huge fight that's still generating some buzz in mixed martial arts. We had, of course, Fedor Emelianenko losing his first fight in I don't know how many years, but you know, the great Fedor, the myth that was Fedor, is now not so tough, I guess. He got submitted pretty early in his Strikeforce fight there with Fabricio Werdum, and another former guest of ours, Kung Lee, got revenge against Scott Smith with a brutal attack with his fists. I mean, he went back to his boxing and threw very few kicks this time, which seemed to have gotten him in trouble last time. He was trying to do too many spinning kicks and theatrical stuff, and he said his cardio wasn't quite up to peak last time. So this time he came in there, and you know, he weathered everything Scott Smith could throw at him. But in the end, Conley just has improved a whole lot better and was more prepared this time going in, and looked a hell of a lot better and more focused and balanced with his approach, I think. As far as boxing goes, I really have heard not much. I mean, I've been looking through the blog stories and stuff like that, but I have really not followed much boxing at all. And I'm going to have to leave that to you. If you have any big boxing things, you're wanting to talk about. I know big thing that I was looking at in my email today is Robert Guerrero is going to fight Joel Casamayor, which I think will be a great fight.
Really? That's relatively interesting. Because you think you have, Guerrero's still got, I think, a lot left in the tank. You know, it's going to depend on what he has, you know, what he has mentally focus-wise. I mean, he's still a young guy, has been in a lot of wars, supremely talented. How much of his heart really is worth, how much of his focus really into it, you know, now with his, you know, I mean, I don't know how his wife is doing with her battle against cancer. I don't know if the cancer's in remission or what the whole story is.
Well, I assume he's only back for boxing because his wife is in a better situation.
I mean, that's something you want to assume, but I, you know, you hope that, you know, you're right on that assumption. Well, let's see what else we got here. Excuse me. The guy he's fighting, Joel Casamayor, talented fighter, you know, tremendous amateur out of Cuba for a number of years. Fought the who's who, you know, in boxing, you know, the junior lightweight and the lightweight division, had some great wins. But he's also, the last few fights, I can't say, you know, that he's the same Casamayor that he was from, you know, back in the day. I mean, he had that, pretty much that beating he took at the hands of Juan Manuel Marquez. And you could tell that the guy's obviously slipped a little bit. He was losing that fight to Michael Cassini. So, I mean, he literally got lucky. I mean, he threw a lucky punch and Cassini's ran right into it. So, Guerrero is on the top of his game and he's focused and he's got his head and heart into it, he should be fine. We also still battling if there is going to be the fight between everybody's been asking for, Pacquiao and Mayweather. You know, you got people out there saying it's almost a done deal, but they're ready to sign the contract. And you got other people saying that not happening. They're still far apart.
I hate to interrupt you, but do you know Floyd Mayweather is going to be holding a boxing camp coming up this July?
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Boxing camp, so that's kind of interesting. It ties into another big story that I'm working on. I don't know if I mentioned this on the show before, but I've been in touch with Reggie Johnson down there in Houston, Texas.
Oh, sure. Former middleweight light heavyweight champ.
Right, and he's actually in jail now in Houston.
You were sending me information on that.
Yeah. But I've since learned quite a bit of new stuff that I'd like to share with the viewers and listeners out there. But that's going to be displayed on the blog, and there's also going to be a subject of a story that I'm going to try to pitch to a Sports Illustrated on this whole scenario. Because at first, you know, of course, you take everything with a grain of salt. You know, you think a DA is going to do her homework and get the person that they're charged and get the evidence that it's going to take to win the case, you know. But in this case, having read the indictments now and read some of Reggie's personal correspondence to me over these last couple months, sounds to me like it's a matter that was probably misconstrued as a criminal case when it should have been a civil case, if anything, you know, like a breach of contract. And I haven't seen any bit of evidence that shows that he spent any of this grant money himself on things that weren't related to the camp. So I'm kind of puzzled as to where the charges come from. I know that I've just found out that the person that was the grant writer and the person that was connected to the Houston Area Urban League down there, which was the main beneficiary in the basically got this money, they channeled it through their organization, and then they gave it to other companies that were going to be doing these projects, and most of them are in the theme of, you know, helping people that were displaced by Hurricane Rita and Katrina. So what ended up happening was they collected about $1.2 million in grants from the Red Cross, and part of this money, $120,000, went to Reggie's Camp. And this Mr. Lee, Edward Lee, who worked for both the Houston Area Urban League and on Reggie's grant, ended up getting 17% of the grant award. And he also managed Reggie's last boxing match. So, I mean, he trusted this guy. And he apparently trusted this guy to write up a proposal, and the guy told him that, listen, you're going to have a fight in summer of 07 that you're going to have to prepare for. You're going to have a fight in coming up that you're going to have to prepare for in 07, so you're not going to be able to do it that summer. And if you do, it's going to be a 50-50 shot if you're going to have the time. So we can do it in 2008. And this is what Reggie says that Mr. Lee told him. You know, it doesn't have to be done right away in 2007. But apparently the DA and whoever filed these charges, I believe it's a woman named Sylvia Brooks from the Houston Area Urban League, filed charges that, you know, organized crime and theft of this money. You know, I haven't even seen any evidence that he spent any of the period, never mind on the camp or what, but Reggie maintains that he was getting ready to do the camp, and they arrested him on June 3rd of 2008, put him in jail, and now he's still there after 2 years of incarceration, waiting for a trial, and, you know, the evidence is so thin, his lawyers have not helped him, and it seems to me there needs to be a whole lot more digging into the whole organization here, the Houston Area Urban League and their practices. You know, I don't know if it's standard practice for a guy who does the facilitation of a grant to get a 17% kickback, but that to me sounds excessive when you're supposed to be working for an organization like that, you know, that's supposed to be a nonprofit. You know, it's, obviously if he's working for them, he's probably getting paid by them for other facilitations. You know, he's got some other way of getting paid, so I don't know why he's trying to get money out of the Red Cross like that. And I don't know enough about the standard practice to say that it's legal or anything, but it just seems to me like it's a bit excessive. You know, maybe like 5% or 10%, but 17%? You know, it just gives him an incentive to get a higher amount. So I don't know if it's Mr. Lee's problem, if it's the Houston Area Urban League that's trying to hide something here, or what the deal is far as the, you know, the real truth of the matter, but the one and most really compelling part of the whole thing is that Reggie's latest lawyer came in to him one day and said, you know, if you just sign here and take this deal, your time's served, you go home today. And he would not sign that, and he's committed to fighting this. So that to me just kind of, it's not truly evidence, but it kind of made me think, well, you know, there's got to be something here that I should look into because he's very animated about this. You know, he might not know the right way to do it like I do with my civil experience, but he definitely seems like he's an innocent person who's being persecuted here for some reason or another, whether it's they don't want to find the facts or whether it's a political thing. I don't know yet, but we're going to dig into it, and we're going to find out, and we're going to pester the DA until she gives us something that either shows she's got no case or that, you know, Reggie is really guilty or whatever happens. We're going to try to find out, and we're going to do a big deal of report on it. And we're going to try to expose it to as many news outlets as possible as we're doing it. And hopefully a big magazine will pick it up, and if not, you know, we'll do it independently, but we'll definitely get the word out on this story. And it has a lot of parallels to Reuben Hurricane Carter, so we're bringing in Patrick McKelligan, who's done some reports for us and is a personal friend of Reuben and helped him with some of his legal matters in the past, so he's going to be helping out with it. And Tony, you can even help out with it, because I don't really, I mean, aside from the article that I wrote about Reggie a few years ago, I don't really know all that much about his fights. And,
I remember watching Reggie Johnson back in the late 80s, late 80s, early 90s maybe, on USA Tuesday Night Fights. Well, of course, really trying to get into boxing. I remember watching several of his fights. Then I remember when he fought James Toney, and he gave James Toney, it might have been his first or second title defense, and he gave James a hell of a fight. He, kind of put his head and knocked James down. And legs out, came back to win the decision. But it was a very good fight.
Because that's the one I found on YouTube, and I watched it, and the clip. Dan Dierdorf is doing the background, and I'm thinking, geez, that must have been the day when the guy that does Sunday football now used to do the boxing. You know, he isn't doing that primetime boxing stuff anymore, huh?
Well, I also got a couple things I want to bring up out of my, my hometown, my Philadelphia connections here. We got a few things coming up. I haven't been able to get to too many local fights lately. You know, it's just kind of hard for me because back in the day, you know, if it was a Friday night card, I would just pull off one of these. I had so much. At my old job, my vacation was measured in hours. This is now my new place is measured in days, so I can't be like, okay, I'm taking a half day today and just taking like 4 hours of vacation. Can't do that no more. Plus, being only two people in the office, I really can't do it. But I want to get to some more fights. Now, down, formerly the New Alhambra, which I know you've read many of my reports, now called the Arena, they got two cards coming up in the month of July. They got one coming up, which is a brand new promotional company. They said it's going to be their first fight there. It's a debut U.S. show, No Limits Promotions, associated with Joey I Boxing Promotions. Joey I is a very well-known cut man in Philadelphia, works with Chuck Mattaccio, my good buddy. And their initial card is going to be in 2 weeks. It's going to be July the 14th. That's actually a Wednesday. Wednesday, July the 14th, that's really going to be tough for me to make. But it's a Israeli cruiserweight, Ron Nakash, who I've actually covered a couple times. Ran is actually dropping down from heavyweight. He's a 24-0 with 18 knockouts. And what's interesting about him is he is in the Israeli army training soldiers in hand-to-hand combat. So that's kind of cool. And he's fighting former light heavyweight champion Lee DeBow, which, I bet you didn't know this, is the first fighter to score a knockdown on Roy Jones.
Ew.
Yes, he is. And then also, another thing that's interesting coming up is we have, and I just am finding this out, I think I missed it, which I couldn't have gone, but I would have liked to. This past Monday, June 28th, June 28th was the Philadelphia House of Representatives declared the day Mike Jones Day at the Newtown Athletic Club in Newtown, Pennsylvania, which is right outside the city. Mike Jones Day. Well, it's pretty cool. I mean, they had a nice article on him in the Philadelphia Daily News the other day. And he's really climbing the ladder. He's got a he's defending his NABA and NABA titles against Irving Garcia in Atlantic City on Friday, July 9th. So I got two, Philadelphians playing pretty primetime fights that night. I got my boy Hammer and Hank Lundy playing up in, is he playing up in Rhode Island, isn't he?
Yeah.
On ESPN, too.
Now, John Molina Jr., we just put a blog.
Yeah, John Molina Jr.
I'm almost way ahead of you because even though you're talking about it, and that's good, and it brings it to life, but, those two, the card that you just mentioned and Hank's card, I just put fresh posts on the blog like not even an hour ago before the show, so it's all up there.
They were thinking alike. Now, here's another piece of trivia for you, Rich. We're going to see how good you are. The Newtown Athletic Club. During my 4 years at Rock Haven, I never had the opportunity to play anywhere close to where I lived. I would fought either Rock Haven, 3 hours away, Penn State, 3.5 to 4 hours away, New York, Virginia, Reno, definitely not driving distance, Kentucky, all those areas. And I loved every fight, every place that I get to fight. I got to fight in VMI, a lot of great places. Never got to fight close to home for any of my friends to come see me. Now, my super senior year, as I called it, you fought at VMI. You were from Massachusetts. I mean, I was from Philadelphia. I went to Lock Haven. I was hoping to get one fight in the Philadelphia area. So my super senior year, as I call it, that last semester that I needed to be there before they give me a diploma and kick me the hell out, we decided
Actually, he was a friend of mine for a while up there. Kid Chris, he graduated before me. He took a job as like the athletic director at this Newtown Athletic Club. And he decided to have a college boxing show there. And he somehow got everything promoted, did a great job with it. My boxing eligibility was up, and I was actually the assistant coach of the team at that time. So Dr. Cox is like, hey, you know, you're going to help me out in the corner that day. I'm like, okay, that sounds great. Whatever reason, I think Cooper's going, I don't remember why. So it's like, okay, I'll help you out in the corner. Doc, that sounds great. So we get there, and the doc's in a panic because he's the one kind of coordinating the show. He goes, one of the judges didn't show up. We need you to judge. I said, you need me to judge? I'm like, are you out of your mind? And he said, no, we need you to judge. I'm like, Doc, I can't judge on guys that I coach. I'm like, that doesn't, just doesn't seem right. He said, no, we need you to judge. Okay, fine, I'll be a judge. So then, to get even more awkward, another guy steps in and volunteers to be a judge. His name was Al Masaccio. His son, Chuck, was fighting on the card. He was judging his own son's fight. So that was a little awkward. So now I'm back to working in the corners again. So they're like, but we don't have a ring announcer. They're like, they turned to me, they're like, you're not working in the corners, you're ring announcing now. I'm like, are you shitting me? So I went from corner man to judge, to corner man to ring announcer. One of my two ring announcing experiences. But it was a lot of fun, and that's Newtown Athletic Center in Newtown, PA. You know what the show, you know the best thing about this show is?
What?
My little tidbits of information. I have little nuggets. Little nuggets, but they're nuggets. And you know, and I can, that's why I'm Rain Man. Because I can pick out something so minute as Mike Jones Day, turning into a story about myself.
I just love when you say Mike Jones, because there's a rapper, Mike Jones, who sings about his own name all the time. Like, I'm Mike Jones, bitch! But anyway, that's great for him, and it's good for boxing, Philadelphia, and Tony Pacquiao.
That's right.
So, proud to you. And I just want to also mention that you know, if you go to the website, you'll notice there's a little less clutter there. I'm trying to cut things down. It still takes a little while to load in the system, but you're working on it. And if you have any suggestions, you can email us at info@unlimitedfightnews.com. Our sponsors are Redux Beverages and Disciplined Fight Gear. And there's tons of links on the website for that. And we're going to definitely try to mention them more and get their name out and do more cross-promotional stuff with them over the next few months. Maybe we'll give away some cocaine.
Yeah.
Energy drink, that is, for those of you listening.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, cocaine is an energy drink that sponsors us. Rich and I are not playing with nose candy, thank you.
I get enough trouble when I'm sober, breaking ankles, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, imagine if the guy was on drinking drugs, it would be horrible.
Yeah.
Anyway. By the way, Rich would be proud of me. I have 4 days into my first, 4 days into my first detoxing for 2 weeks.
Nice.
Yeah, it was horrible. I was just didn't kid myself last weekend.
Yeah,
I'm too old to be partying like I was.
I drank a lot at night, which is probably why one of the reasons why I lost 10 pounds in a week. But everything is just getting, all the water weight was getting sucked into that and then pissed out. But, you know, it was always at night. It wasn't like I'm drinking in the middle of work, so I can't even blame alcohol and breaking my ankle. It was just pure adrenaline. I was just going too fast, jumping around like a nutcase.
Well, hey, you know, that's almost as bad as my friend Mike, another guy that, one of the guys I tried to get on my show the other week when we didn't have a guest and he wouldn't take my call. But when I was training a few months ago, he came over to one night and I'm like, Mike, we're going to do a YouTube video tonight, you know, you hit the mess. I don't want to do a YouTube video. I said, once again,
you're talking here like you have a choice, which you don't. I said, you're doing a YouTube video, you're in the mid. Why? I said, do the video progress report, then we'll do another video in about 3 months, and you'll see how much better you've gotten. I don't want to do a video, you'll put it on YouTube. I said, yes, I will. You don't have a choice. I say, you do. So I had him hitting the bag, and I said, all right, Mike, I'm going to hit the bag for about 4 rounds. I want you to jump loads, and then I want you to hit the speed bag. And then we'll do our video. So I'm hitting the bag first round, and I hear, whip, 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 whip,
I smelled my ankle jumping rope. There goes the rest of the worker. I think he did it on purpose. Rich, I think you did it on purpose. Hurt your ankle. Didn't have to make any more of your videos hitting your man-made invention.
No. See, the thing was, though, that happened at the end of a week where I was, like, better conditioned than ever. I mean, the mountain biking alone, I mean, granted, most of it was downhill, but I covered a lot of distance on that mountain bike. And I even crashed once because the lady was pulling out of McDonald's. And she's in her minivan. She had plenty of time, and I'm like a half mile away, and she wouldn't pull out and turn. And I was like waiting too long for her to pull out and go, and I friggin' turned the bike wheel, and it's one of those wheels that has like almost a 360-degree turn radius. And that's what hits the frame, so it just went right in the sand in the parking lot, and I went face down. And I survived with no injuries, but very pissed off mood. But still, that was like on a 15 to 20 mile bike ride that day that happens. And then, you know, it was just like unbelievable for my legs. And then the ankle break happened. So, and I was like, I was so thrilled. I was in peak performance, and then that happens. But anyway, it's a good thing because, you know, it's just going to inspire me to do more of that stuff that's exciting to think of. They're having kind of a good time going downhill and riding a bike like that in the middle of the mountain. So you don't even realize that you're getting a workout. I mean, you realize it, but you're trying not to. You're trying to just, you know, get there. So it's just an incentive that you got a lot to look at. You know, you can kind of fool yourself into just getting there rather than doing your workout. Like when I run, it's all about the workout around here. But, you know, up there, mountain biking, water skiing. I mean, the type of activity that you're doing is like so much more worth it. You know, it's like a memory every time. And you see so much more wildlife up there, for one. Seeing loons, raccoons, field mice the size of your head. It works. You see it. So it's kind of cool. My dad has chickens now up there, so he's got eight Rhode Island Reds, and one of them being the rooster. So it was kind of funny to watch. He's got a little dirt dog, Chihuahua, that hurt him. She's going to get run over by the tractor, though. She's a little mongrel. Straight out the I don't know where. She's a crazy dog. And I've seen this dog literally, my dad's driving around like a $20,000 Kubota tractor, industrial grade almost, and this dog is running after the tractor, biting the front wheel. Like, wants to get run over one of these days, so it's just a miracle that the dog's still alive. The whole day we're trying to get trees out of there, the dog's biting the roots and stuff like that, so it's quite a unique experience. And we got to have a nice boat ride with my friend Nick Fleming up there. We call him the Flem Dog and Nature Boy Nick Fleming. He runs a nice little marina up there. And he had us out on a boat up there with a crew straight out of Girls Gone Wild. You'll see the video eventually, Tony, but I didn't have time to upload it. So let's just say it's R-rated, almost X. But I can keep the camera rolling for that action.
Well, that's what I like to hear.
It was a good time, it was well worth it, and we needed the break, but not that kind of break at the end of it.
R-rated is cool.
Yeah. But anyway, let's hop on over to Bark Track and see what's going on for the upcoming.
Yeah, please, my computer's a piece of shit now. I gotta get it fixed before I can really surf the web as much while I'm doing this. I the way I'm sounding right now, it's even hard for me to go any I can't listen to this. I can't listen to myself as I talk. And if we, do we even have a chat room? Because if we are, I can't log into it.
What's
very annoying.
Premium. I'm
going to
go to premium. I think we're
going to
do that next week.
Okay. Like I said, I'm going nuts until I get this damn thing fixed. But I'm saving my money for my tattoos.
Yeah.
The 3-part tattoo project is into effect in 2010.
Yeah, the tattoos are when I was up in New Hampshire because it's bike week, and you know, everybody likes tattoos and bikers and craziness. So,
people think I'm a biker just by the way I dress, like the bandanas and like the tattoos and the shades and the goatee and all that. I could barely even ride a bicycle, honestly. And then the other thing is, last week I came to find out that, I guess you didn't know this, Rich, I am a pilot.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, my one little cousin, because I wear like head wrap bandanas, thinks I'm a pilot. Which I didn't know. I didn't know that, I'm a pilot.
Well, anyway. Especially when you're trying to be Macho Man Randy Savage.
Macho Man Randy Savage, The Undertaker, you name it, I've done it. Except this weekend, first if you go on my Facebook page, you see me in my Uncle Sam costume getting in the dunk tank a few years ago. And this year, what I'm doing is I'm going to do more of like the Apollo Creed look. Sort of traditional.
You won.
Yes. What did we win?
I wanted to work Apollo Creed into the Reggie Johnson story, you know, and because he's kind of like the Apollo Creed that is matching Rocky IV. You know, this could kill the guy. This jail thing, you know, this could ruin your life, and that's what he's facing right now. He's facing the toughest fight of his life. Could kill him.
You know what else is great?
He's such a close match to the Apollo Creed character. He looks like him when he's younger.
You know what's great, though? We're doing a show here. We're talking about real combat sports. Yet we do two mentions of Apollo Creed in tonight's show. Which is the first hour.
Well,
I talked about...
Think about it. You know, the day of Rocky's gift card was...
You know what I'd like to say to these people that keep saying these congratulations messages? Oh, let's see. Congratulations. You are in line for a free ass-whipping if you don't fucking stop interrupting our show. You like that? I like that.
We've recorded about $9,000 in Walmart gift cards.
I know. We really have. You know, can we use this as a lawsuit? Because basically these shows aren't taped and recorded. We can, like, put these in as evidence and be like, yo, they said it live on the air. We won free gift cards. We want them.
But I do have to tell you about a little observation I made when I was in New Hampshire. I was listening to a show that I guess is in the Chicago area, produced and broadcast, but it's syndicated and it goes everywhere. But it's called the Free Beer and Hot Wing Show. Have you ever heard of this?
I like it already.
It's called the Free Beer and Hot Wings. One guy's free beer, the other guy's hot wings. And, you know, they just... It took a little while for me to get used to, but I was listening to them all week because... guy's name was up there at his cottage. He had it blasting before he'd go to work every morning, so that's what I had to listen to. Anyway, they did this great thing, one of the most masterful things I've ever heard done on radio. They had this guy go to the Michael Jackson the house where he grew up in for the one-year anniversary of his death. I don't know if you caught any of this stuff on TV. But he goes there, and it's all recorded on radio. He goes there, they're talking to him on the phone, or, you know, some way that people can't see him. He must have had like a clip on his ear or something. What's that thing? The earpiece for the phone or whatever, so that they couldn't see him talking on the phone. But they were, you know, literally talking to him as he's down there. And he's dressed like a number one fan of Michael Jackson. He's got the sign that says Michael's number one fan. And there's all kinds of media around the house. It's a big event. And they're going to dedicate a statue to Michael there. So it's in Gary, Indiana, too, which is not very populated, so not a lot of people are going to show up to this thing, but he does. And they do this stunt where he just gets interviewed by all these newspapers, Reuters, like television shows, local news channels. I mean, And they're feeding him answers, and they keep telling him to, like, hit on the reporter. Oh, it was just unbelievable. And, I mean, I don't know if it was a setup, if they did it fake or whatever. It sounded very real to me. But, man, that was some thought and a good amount of funny stuff that they had saying. Had him saying, they had him, at one point, he was saying, oh, I don't know any of Michael's songs. I just like them all. I don't know any of them by name. Just, he's like, just the way that they did it, it was just so unbelievable. And the thing that made me really laugh was the fact that they kept talking about how Joe Jackson beat Michael. You know, and that's supposed to be a funny thing, but you know, whenever they mentioned the house, it was always like, the place where Joe Jackson put Marcus's head in a vice, or Michael in a geek. First put Michael in a guillotine choke when he was 12 years old. they just had me laughing at certain times. Certain times they weren't that great, but man, they hit the nail right on the head, and I was thinking we ought to do more of like a prank stuff, you know, because that's what really people like to listen to, the, you know, the setup stuff that's just bound to work, and you know, the stuff that gets people rolling. So I'm going to try to think about more ways to get that going. Do some more interesting things with the show.
My observation, I got two things to mention. Number one, Michael Jackson died?
Yeah.
When the hell did that happen?
We were actually selling Michael Jackson shirts alongside Rocky Marciano stuff at the Brockton Fair.
Wow. Michael Jackson is dead, huh?
I don't know if Rocky would have approved.
Congratulations. Yeah. You won.
So Michael Jackson's dead. Now, what are you going to try to tell me next? That Gary Coleman died?
Yeah, dude. Webster's dead.
Not Webster.
I know. A joke.
Oh. Anyway,
Webster. So what you talk about, Wes? I used to watch that show. I wish that I had my own arcade game. Anyway, Demetrius Hopkins is fighting Mighty Mike Arnutis tomorrow night.
That should be a nice little fight for Demetrius. He should be able to get a win out of that. Mike Arnutis is a good fighter, but you know, Hopkins is, I think, too good of a boxer for him. Arnutis has definitely seen better days, and should be a definite win for Demetrius.
I know that there's, I'm not sure if it's this weekend, but I know that there's a big fight coming up.
Congratulations, you won.
Hey, we won again, huh?
There's a big fight coming up with Juan Manuel Marquez and Juan Baby Bull. Yeah, it's the rematch.
Rematch, yeah. That, let's see, we got to see if Diaz can do any better this time. He was taking it to Marquez early in that fight. I mean, he was pressuring him, he was landing some shots, and then Marquez, he started breaking him down, knocked him out. Pretty brutally, by the way.
Well, I'm looking at Boxrec here, and I do not see much of the 4th of July weekend here.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have much like going on the TV. Pretty slow, and I'm not too happy about that.
Not a good boxing weekend. You like boxing?
No, not at all.
Go see some fireworks and push somebody on the beach. Go see some boxing. Your own. You're lucky. Anyway, sure, we get a few MMA events to mention.
Well, yeah, you got a big MMA event this weekend. And you know what? If Dan Lloyd wasn't such an asshole, I wouldn't mind watching this fight. But I won't watch it just because I'm boycotting him.
UFC 160, Brock Lesnar versus Shane Carwin. Yeah, this is his comeback fight, of course. And, you know, of course, it makes me think of the time when, I forget who he beat, but he beat somebody and he went into WWE Evo. And then he started talking about, I don't drink Bud Light, I drink Coors. Or I drink Coors Light.
Right.
No, yeah, it wasn't Bud Light. It was Coors Light. and get on top of my wife, that comment. Well, I wonder tonight, not tonight, it's July 3rd, that's Saturday night. Or Saturday night, if he's going to get that surge of crazy adrenaline and say something to Dana White, because I think that would actually almost be appropriate, and he would get away with it, because Dana White, sold him down the river and said he was almost dying, and said a whole bunch of things about him never fighting again, and, just talked out of turn. In the same breath, he said that Brock didn't want anybody to know. He wanted his privacy. He wanted it to be kept quiet. And Dana went out there and blasted the whole world that the guy's fucked up and he's in trouble and might die. Just ridiculous stuff, And it was I don't know whether he was doing it on purpose to try to sell the fact that, the guy's been making an incredible comeback, or whether he was just, trying to make sure that the guy was going to come back, so he's going to be... I don't know. I don't know what the hell the guy was thinking. Nobody can predict or analyze. And try it all day. It was just stupid. It was one of the stupidest things I've ever seen Dana White do. I was really disappointed, and I thought it was disrespectful. So I'd like to see Brock Lesnar go back to the WWE stuff for once if he wins this fight, and really lay into Dana right on camera. I'd love to see it, and he's the type of guy that would do it and should do it. So if you're listening, Brock Lesnar, go for it. What do you have to lose?
He's worth the for Brock. Make the man look like an ass.
Yeah, and Shane...
he's not going to get no job on his own right, make himself look like an ass, but make him look more of an ass.
Yeah. He had no call to say the things he did. And I don't think Brock's come out and addressed that yet, so that would be a great time to do it.
Yeah, right.
And Shane Carwin, I would not want to bet against him either, so this is going to be a great fight. Also, Chris Leben is going to be on the card fighting Yoshihiro Akiyama, who is apparently the number two heavyweight in the world. He's considered the number two heavyweight. Vitals fighting Matt Brown. Stefan Bonner fighting Christoph Sosniski. Gilbert Soteropoulos is fighting Kurt Pellegrino. And Shab Christopher. Ricardo Romero is fighting Seth Petrozelli. Kendall Grove fighting Lord Relchick, and Gerald Harris fighting David Branch, Daniel Roberts versus Forrest Pettis, and finally John Madsen versus Carlos Lamola. So really, not a whole lot of unbelievable matchups there. Some guys that we haven't seen in a while, I think, are Matt Brown, Chris Lyle. We had him on the show, I think, years ago, if I remember correctly, years ago, like Chris Lytle. Brendan Schaub, he was just on one of the Ultimate Fighter shows not too long ago, I think it was the Heavyweights. So he's back. Seth Petrozelli. I believe he's the guy that knocked out Kimbo. So that's interesting. Seth the Silverback Petrozelli, yeah. So they threw out Kimbo, but they're taking Seth. That's interesting. So, we'll see what happens with him. Kevin Ferguson, lead XC. That's the Silverback. He's going to, be making his UFC debut. Yeah. He's been a King of the Cage in WEC. Oh no, he was on UFC Fight Night. I take that back in 2007. And in 2006, he was on UFC The Final Chapter. So it's not his UFC debut, it's his third time in the UFC. Third time in the UFC. Breaks his record, I'm sure, though. But I just find that kind of funny that they threw Kimbo out and bring in Seth in. We still haven't found out whether Kimbo's going to back to MMA or not, or continue his career. I haven't really researched that or looked into it either, but it certainly hasn't been everywhere in the news. What's going on there? Manny Pacquiao was sworn in the other day.
Yeah, I heard that.
But you know what? I mean, I think that's great for him. You know, he's doing something that's been a goal of his, a dream of his for a long time. And I know some other fighters have tried to get in politics. Klitschko tried to win a seat in the Ukraine. I don't know exactly what that would be considered. But the thing is, if any fight comes along, whether it's Mayweather, whether it's another fight with Cotto, whether whoever, how will that be a distraction for a guy like Manny Pacquiao? I mean, how can he balance it all, honestly?
That's a tough one. We have Tough Enough coming up on the second Friday. Tough Girls, Orleans Arena, Las Vegas. And we have a DEP event over in Tokyo on Saturday. Tail fight going on in Brazil on Saturday. And the M1 Selection Asia Finals 2010 going on in Tokyo on Saturday. We have a fight in New Zealand at Sammy's Entertainment Venue. Southern Diplomacy, Southern Supremacy on Saturday. Swat in Face coming in Tokyo, Japan on Saturday. Battle Hazard 4, also same place, Tokyo, Japan. Pancras Passion Tour 6, different arena, Differ Ariake, Tokyo, Japan. And then Shuto, Gate Saitama 2 is going on in Saitama, Japan on Sunday. And then that's also the Passion Tour, is also on Sunday. Caged Vengeance 7 is next Wednesday. Stars and Strikes, you can buy that through our website and help us out. We got a blog on that. That's on the 9th of July at the Tachi Palace Hotel and Casino in Northern California. And we have a grappling event also on our blog that you can click on and help us out. We can make money off. So do that if you want to see it on your computer. See some good fights and grappling matches. That wraps up the MMA upcoming events. Do have some other little tidbits. The Prize Fighter Super Middleweights just ended Wednesday night, June 30th. And I just wanted to mention that they had a record for the youngest winner ever, 19-year-old Patrick Mindy. He won the whole thing. And it was 26 seconds. 1 minute and 26 seconds into after he stopped Dudley Sam Horton. 1 minute and 26 seconds into the fight. It was the quickest win in the competition, 13-19-8. So he set the record as the youngest boxer and the quickest knockout in the same turn. Youngest boxer to win it. And Rockets a 32,000-pound winner's check as UK money. And they beat a fighter named Paul David in the final. So there's a nice blog about that. So a couple of good pictures. If you click on the picture, you get the full-scale version. I'm saying that the blog is good like that.
You haven't really touched upon yet, and I know she probably has more information than I do. I just saw a quick little blurb about it the other day. But wasn't there a fatality in an MMA fight the other night?
Wasn't there a what?
A fatality, a death?
A death in an MMA fight?
Yeah, I thought I read that somewhere.
Recently?
Well, yeah, like a couple of days ago.
You got me searching.
Hold on. Up the tornado, look it up. He's got to do it all. He's got to be the boxing rain man. Now he's got to be the MMA rain man. Guacamole. I do it all. I am it all. I am the new breed.
Yes, there was a death of a winning streak. Michael Kirkham death spurs MMA fight review. One day. That's what Google News says.
You seriously didn't know about that?
No, I didn't. It's, the Huffington Post is going to bring me up to date. Bastards.
Yeah, I mean.
You beat me to it. Alright,
yeah, South Carolina
Commission announced Tuesday that it will conduct an internal review of Michael Kirkham's fight on Saturday, in which Kirkham suffered injuries leading to his death 2 days later. Also, Kirkham's death is currently under investigation by the Aiken County Coroner's Office as a standard procedure for any death within the county. According to the Huffington Post, we got the story from MMAfighting.com.
Yeah, I saw something like that, like one of those, like, AOL, like, stories, like, on the main page, and there's, you know, death in an MMA fighter. I was like, oh, shit. So, like, MMA fighter dies or something. So I jumped on and I read it real quick. And I was like, oh, shit, we got to talk about this when we do the fight. It's hard to say.
You know, it's kind of haunting that you mentioned that, because there was a moment that the fights were so dull up in New Hampshire that somebody in the crowd yelled out, "Fatality!" Like Mortal Kombat. I hate to make a joke, but it was funny at the time. Now it's kind of chilling that happened around the same time.
Well, I'm finding another article right now, Rich, too. He actually had 2 deaths to report in MMA.
Two.
We have Dan Vasquez of Houston may become the first player to die from injury sustained in a mixed martial arts competition in North America.
I mentioned him in a report I did called The Myths of MMA.
Yeah.
The Bleacher Report, The Myths and Misconceptions of MMA. Because he was the first death that happened in the
MMA. Oh, okay. That was a couple weeks ago. Okay, I'm sorry.
The reason I saw that... It was an unsanctioned competition, and it was like right after the fight ended, he went into a coma and never came out dead.
Yeah, the reason I said something about Vasquez, well, I thought it was MMA death, because I couldn't remember the guy's name, and it was like, the date of the article was June 29th, 2010, talking about Sam, so I immediately clicked on it, thinking that was the date, but no, the date was back in 07, but yeah, here's the Michael Kirkham death. It's hard to say about boxing and MMA, like, which is more dangerous. See, boxing has had more fatalities, of course, because it's been around longer, for one. And second of all, the bursts of violence in mixed martial arts can be more profoundly violent. Like, you get a situation where you get a guy. And just for example, we'll say when Chuck Liddell was having his fight the other week. I didn't see it, but, you know, he got called back without cold. Now, did the guy get one or two shots before they stopped the fight? Okay, just say, he hits the guy with a left kick, Liddell's going down, hits the canvas. He's obviously out cold. The guy can pound down, land 2 more shots on his unprotected head before the referee stops it. In a boxing match, when that guy hits the ground, the opponent's got to go to the neutral corner, and they don't count. Now, so there can be quick and more violent bursts of, violent blows to the head. But in a boxing match where you have the bigger gloves, you have the guys maybe a little bit better defensively, and the main basis is punching instead of any type of grappling or any type of chokehold or submission. Basically, what you're getting is guys that are taking sustained blows to the head. You've had some fatalities, like the one out of Philadelphia recently with Francisco Rodriguez back in November. I mean, it was a competitive fight back and forth until about the 10th round when he was fading, he was getting a little bit tired, and Teon Kennedy caught him with about, 7 or 8 flush hard shots. They stopped the fight, and then he goes into a coma. Or you had sustained beatings like the one Jimmy Garcia when he fought Gabriel Arellis years ago. Or even Gerald McClellan, he didn't pass away, but he was severely brain damaged when he put Nigel Benn. A number of them over the years, we see Stephon Johnson when he fought Paul Baden. These guys took sustained punishment for 8, 9, 10 rounds. A lot of times they've been weakened from losing weight. That doesn't help. So all these different factors, and it's the repeated punishment. Rarely in boxing do you see a guy get hit with one shot and then have a fatal brain injury.
Well, the thing, like you mentioned earlier with the Chuck Liddell fight, he was hit after he was knocked out. And this might be the same, similar instance, because it says that the only report of the actual fight that I found so far says that he was taken down early and stopped by ground and pound punches. Kirkham would not regain consciousness and was attended to by doctors inside the ring before being transferred to the hospital. And another article on MMAfighting.com says he was pronounced dead of a brain hemorrhage. And
right.
There'll be an autopsy that will maybe reveal more, but it was his pro debut. He had fought some amateur fights, and there's actually a video of one attached to him in MMAfighting.com where I won. So check that out if you want to know more. There's still only, like you said, the second recorded death in what they call sanctioned competition. So it's significant, but it's not alarming quite yet.
Right. And like I said, you've seen a lot of fights. The referees, from what I've seen, are usually very good. Usually when a guy is rendered defenseless, they're quick to stop the fights. Boxing is a little bit more difficult. Because in an MMA fight, when a fight gets stopped, the guy's usually on his back getting piled upon. In a boxing match, you have the opportunity to hold. If your guy's down, he has the opportunity to get up, clear his head. He usually has about a good 8 to 10 seconds to try to get his cobwebs cleared. Sometimes more than that, sometimes up to 15 seconds, to try to clear the cobwebs to prove that he's okay so he can regain, remain fighting. So that's another thing that, was involved in. Referees have been doing generally a good job. I was arguing with a friend of mine about a year or two ago. I mean, he's a big MMA fan. I mean, he thinks it's the greatest thing in the world. And the fact that I'm not a fan pisses him off. He invites me to every show that he has, and I decline every one of them. But he was saying to me one time, he goes, in your sport, meaning boxing, you knock a guy down, you walk away and throw him into the corner and let him get up. In my sport, we jump on top of him and finish the job. I said, really, how many fights have you had? Well, no. I said, then shut the fuck up. But the thing is that, and that's one reason I prefer boxing. You knock a guy down, I mean, you go to that neutral corner and it's like, it's that fight. Can he get back to his feet before the 10 count? Can he survive the round? Can he come back? Like I said, some of the greatest fights in boxing would have been over if they were MMA fights. Marciano Walcott, Dirty Joe would have finished that fight in 48 seconds. He would have jumped on Rocky, he was stunned, and that would have been it. Dottie Ward, all three of them. Corrales Castillo, some of the great boxing matches that I've really enjoyed over the years wouldn't have made great MMA fights. And probably vice versa.
We're going to get to our guest, Tyler Breece. I got him queued up, ready to go. We're going to follow. He's already waiting for us. We did him 5 minutes ago. But good on you, Tony, for getting a good discussion going on a very important topic.
Oh, you're welcome. Come on.
Sure.
Going pretty good, man.
We got Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line with us, too. He's our boxing guru, a.k.a. Rain Man, we call him.
What's up? How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, man. You?
I'm doing all right. Can't complain. Going with the weekend.
So, Tyler, tell us a little bit about yourself, your fighting career, and... any pertinent details about any upcoming fights or
what you're doing right now? Well, I'm 23. I'm a heavyweight, light heavyweight. Record's 5-3. I got an upcoming fight, July 10th in Joplin. I'll be main event for that.
What state is that?
Huh?
What state is that? You said Joplin? What state?
Joplin, Missouri.
Joplin, Missouri, okay. Okay, yeah, that's pretty cool. And you're sponsored by Discipline.com, one of our sponsors too.
Yes, sir.
And what's been what's the experience with them been like?
It's been awesome, man. They're a really good sponsor. I like the team unity. You know, they just, what they represent. You know, what I represent. You know, discipline in the gym, discipline in the cage.
All right. It doesn't hurt that you know, the owner is a MMA strength and conditioning coach, right?
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's an intense guy. I've seen some of his videos. We got a link to him on our website, so we hope more people watch those. He definitely has some unique approaches and some great insight into conditioning. Period. You know, never mind for what sport, but certainly some good moves to practice for MMA and some stuff.
Oh yeah.
Without even a partner to hone your skills, so he knows what he's doing, and I'm sure he's going to grow this line. Right now, I think he's only got the shirts, but I've seen him being worn by a fighter in the cage up here in Massachusetts already. So you know he's getting out there, and he's moving fast, and he's getting the shirts out there. They look great. I just sent a couple of them to my room girls. I'm waiting for pictures back. But, you know, he's a great guy. I'm glad he's working with you. How did you guys hook up in the first place?
Through my team manager, Jeremy Morton for Team Thrash, and he hooked us up.
And what got you into fighting in the first place? What was your first real fight period?
Man, I was just young. My dad passed away, and I just needed something to, you know, get me off the streets, and I got into martial arts, and you know, my trainers and stuff encouraged me to get in the cage. I got in the cage, and it was a couple seconds in, I knocked the dude out, and after that, it just took off.
So you started with the traditional martial arts. What kind? Was it all sorts?
I started out in some jiu-jitsu, some ground, you know, and my dad was a boxer, so I took after him, and I try to keep it standing up. If it goes to the ground, I'm good there.
Did your dad fight pro?
Huh?
Did your dad fight pro as a boxer?
No, he was a Golden Glove.
Oh, all right. Well, that's good enough.
Where was your Golden Glove out of again? He fought out of Humboldt, Kansas.
Okay. At what time?
Huh?
When was he fighting, around what time period?
Oh, man. It would have been probably late 50s, early 60s.
Okay. Yeah, I was trying to find out. Like, I'm always just a big boxing fan. I always like to talk to people that have fought in the Golden Gloves, no matter when or where. It's always interesting to me, and I was trying to see what, because I have a lot of guys that I've trained with that have, you know, fought all decades, all generations. Some guys obviously retired now. And I was always, you know, just trying to hear names and really trying to put two and two together.
Yeah, yeah. His rib broke in my last sparring match by a guy from the Golden Gloves. Actually, he went on after my sparring session to win the Golden Gloves out here in his weight class from Massachusetts and then the region. And I'm not sure, I never heard whether he went to Nationals, but I believe there was like a fight with his trainers over whether he should go to Nationals. So, I got him ready again. He tenderized me, that's for sure, on his way there. So that's great that you have that in your blood. I'm sure that that instinct kind of comes out of that, you know, having that that fighting spirit already in your heart and, you know, in your head, because your dad's probably told you all the stories about it, I'm sure, right? Hello? Tyler? Anybody? Can you hear me now?
What'd you do, Rich? Scare him away?
Tyler. No, we hung up on him. It's been deep thought. lost you there for a second.
Yeah, man, I'm on the road and I'm on these hills and I lost service.
Oh, it wasn't me. I wasn't boring you then. We were just asking if you feel like there's instinct or you know, something in your blood that you get from your dad being a boxer. You feel that sometimes?
I do, man. Like I just my first fight, I was in school and I was picking on a little brother. And he came at me, and I duck and dodged every one of his punches, and I had never been in a fight before. It was just like I was born to box.
Yeah, my grandmother told me one time, I was asking her, I was thinking one day, you know, why do I have no fear of heights? You know, I go on roofs with ladders over my head, and never get really afraid. Aware of the dangers, you know, and I feel kind of anxious sometimes, but I never get like afraid.
Yeah.
Like they can't even go up high because they're so afraid. No, I'm the first black guy to go up there, you know, just be careful about the smartness. But I asked my grandmother about the hill one day. I fell off the roof before, so I had a real bad injury from it, and still not afraid of heights. I asked my grandmother about it one day, and she said, you know why? It's probably because of all our ancestors who worked in crow's nests on the big ships fishing. Yeah, because we come from a huge fishing family. And, you know, people that were on ships their whole lives out of Massachusetts and the ports, Gloucester and the Bedford. So I said, wow, you know, that's probably it. You're right. It makes a lot of sense. Certain things, they just get passed down to you because it's in your genetic code.
Oh, yeah.
Fighting is one that's in mine because of my dad's father, who was a boxer. And it's one of the pictures that I always kept in my room growing up was one portrait of his dad in boxing gloves posing for the camera in black and white. So,
I got lucky and it just got passed down to me.
That's awesome. Well, what's been your best fight so far, and what would you say was your toughest fight?
My toughest fight was probably my third fight. I took it real short notice. I got called up. Guy asked me if I wanted to fight. I had a couple weeks to train for it. Didn't know anything about the guy. I went in there and I focused mainly on my stand up and he kept taking me down. And second round came around, he rushed in for a takedown and I just gave him a stiff uppercut and I just dropped him. And it was probably the best knockout that I've ever had.
Was it one of those shots you could feel down in your toes when you landed?
Huh?
Is it one of those shots that when you landed, you can feel it the jolt all the way down to your toes?
Man, I can't hear you.
Okay, with the uppercut you said you landed. I said, was it one of those shots that when you landed, you can actually feel the jolt of the punch all the way down to your toes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I've told Tony before. I regret it now, but back when I used to box, the uppercut was something I never used. And I always wondered why. I mean, so I practiced it, and I threw it on the heavy bag, but when I was in the ring, I never used it, but I used to always get caught with it by this one boxer. He wasn't all that great, because I never used it enough in myself in fights, I would always get caught with it. I wasn't ready for it.
Oh, I mean, I shoulder rolled into it and just boom.
Well, as far as your ultimate goal in the sport, what would you say that is?
To be the best, man. I think that's everybody's goal in this sport is just to be the best.
And right now you're fighting some local circles there. Have you had any big offers to go up any higher than where you're at right now yet, or still building your...
I've had an offer to fight in Panama Beach in October.
Nice.
That's a good time to go to Panama Beach.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not only going to take it for the fight, I'm going to take it for the beach, man.
Right.
There you go.
Fighting skills will travel. So
yeah, they're paying my way, they're paying everything, so I'm taking it.
Right. There you go. Well, we hope that works out for you, and if it's on GoFight Live, we'll definitely tune in to watch. We get free affiliate passes for them, so if they're on it, we'll be watching. And definitely looking forward to seeing you fight more and to seeing you represent the discipline line, of course. Now, one question I usually ask is what do you love most about the sport? What's like the best thing about what you do?
Oh, man. I love the competitiveness. You know, it's just competitive. I've always been competitive. Everything I do, it's got to be the best. And it helped me out a lot after my dad passed away. You know, I didn't know what to do with myself. And after I got into it, it just kind of centered me. And I think that's what I like, the discipline of it.
Yeah. I think that's partially why a lot of people get involved, for the discipline of it and, you know, the training regimen. I mean, we find out soon enough if we stick with it as boxers, no matter what level we do it. You know, I found someone who's all kinds of boxers over the years and talked to them all on interviews. That you get into a sense where you realize very soon that if you're going to be great, you have to condition yourself like nobody's business. you have to be in such great shape. And the kicker for me was when I went down to Virginia Military Institute the year I almost actually fought my co-host here, Tony, and we started doing 7.5-mile runs every Tuesday. And that's what I needed to do, and I knew it. And that got me in shape to go as far as I did that year in my only one semester of competitive boxing. And, of course, I had some scattered fights along the way that were unsanctioned, but that was my glory days, and it was the conditioning that was the difference. So it's just one of those things that you have to realize when you're going to get serious about it, that you've got to do it. You got to make the sacrifices, and you got to run the miles, and every single day you got to do a little bit more if you want to keep getting better. So.
Oh yeah, you got to put the hours in just like you would, you know, 9-to-5 job.
Right. And a lot of people, like even in the creative side of things that I do, they say that you got to have a day job sometimes. You got to be also doing that regular work, and then every spare second you got to be thinking about making it big in the thing you're passionate about, whether it's fighting or. My case, working websites and writing and stuff like that. I still have the fighting on the back burner, trying to make my amateur boxing come back. But that's still in the works. We'll see. Anyway, I don't want to steal any more of your thunder here. Tell us a little bit more about your next fight, your next opponent, and what you're doing to get ready.
My next fight is probably my biggest so far. You know, first main event that I've had. And I'm pretty sure I'm fighting a guy named Bobby Lewis from West Plains, Missouri.
All right. And do you know anything about his background or what to expect?
I watched a couple fights on him. He likes to stand up, which is, my kind of guy.
He feeds right into your game, as far as you can see. But also, you can never underestimate a guy's ability to adapt, as we've seen so many times in so many MMA fights over the years, at any level you see it. One of the fights I always like to talk about is kind of in your neck of the woods. In Iowa, I went to a fight where a kid fought a UFC veteran. Josh Helgerson. John Helgerson. Anyway, this was a local kid. He was fighting like you wouldn't believe. Every time it was stand up or anything else, he was winning the fight. And literally at the last 20 to 10 seconds of every round, the kid got caught in some kind of submission move. So that was Halverson's only saving grace. And literally 9 seconds and counting left in the entire fight, third round, the announcer is counting down. This local kid, everybody's cheering his name. he's cocking the triangle choke. And it's deep. And he's not tapping. The announcer gets to like 3, 2, 1. And as the one is being announced, the ref calls it off. And it was just like one of those moments where I realized that MMA truly is any given Sunday, anything. I could not believe it. It was the most, it was absolutely the last possible second, clearly. And that's the way it goes sometimes. When he was knocked out, he was out cold. And he would have been fight on all the judges' cards if he just hung out.
It's just, that's the sport, man. So you got your ups and you got your downs.
Yeah. You always have to watch out for those tricky little moves, too. It's one of those reasons, like, you know, I think sometimes, like, you know, maybe I'd be good in the cage. I got some things wrestling and boxing at the same time. But I just, I realize how far and how fast people are moving in the sport. Even as, you know, debuting pros, they get so much more under their belt. Because they've been preparing specifically for that, and I've only ever prepared specifically for boxing, you know, and a little bit of wrestling in high school. I mean, I haven't done a wrestling move in I don't know how long, you know, unless it's just screwing around. But anyway, point being, you know, there's just so much involved, so it's hard to even prepare for any fight and for how to self sometimes. I don't know where to start.
Yeah, you gotta know everything now. You gotta know your boxing, your kickboxing, your jiu-jitsu, your wrestling. I mean, if you don't know it all, then you know, you're done.
Right. Any one guy's style can just ruin your approach. You know how to get around your best skill now. And you see guys like Chuck Liddell fading into the distance because they're still one-dimensional. Still trying to fight with those unorthodox punches.
Yeah.
Leaving his face wide open. You know, it's just not going to work anymore. It's like Fedor, you know, the big right hand that comes over the top, you know. After that close call there with his last fight, obviously Fabricio Verdun was waiting to exploit that weakness, you know. And then it was just a big shock to a lot of people, but I kind of felt like that was coming after that Brett Rogers fight with Fedor.
I think that shocked the world, man. I think that shocked the world.
Well, Fedor was kind of like that Rocky Marciano type because, you know, he did have that one loss way back in his career. He had that such unbelievable fan base, number one, and notoriety and legend, really. The legend of Fedor.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you look back at some of his opponents over the last few years, he's gone out of his way to pick people that... you know, have big names, but aren't quite world beaters. So this Strike Force thing kind of forced him to fight some of the bigger names and better fighters. And I kind of had a feeling it was going to happen. And there was talk beforehand, before this fight even happened, that Fedor was talking of retirement as well. So we'll see. Well, he's one of those folks that nobody wanted to see go, even though, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody might have seen it coming. It was bound to happen eventually. Alistair Overeem would have done it if Christopher Doom didn't. But, anyway. How old are you, by the way?
I'm 23, man.
23? You got plenty of time. And what's your record again?
5-3.
5-3. Well, you got a great start going. And,
Thank you.
As far as... when was your pro debut?
My what?
Your pro debut, when was that?
I haven't had it, man. I'm still an amateur.
Oh, you're an amateur, all right. So you're 5-3 as an amateur, and is the one that they're offering you in Florida, is that going to be the, or in Panama Beach, is that going to be the one?
Yeah. That's going to be my pro debut.
All right. So the beach, free travel, and your pro debut, oh, that's all I have to work for at 23. It's a good age.
It's a good age to hit the beach, man, as a pro.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, we look forward to catching that if that's going to be on TV somewhere or Pro Fight Live. We'll definitely watch that, like we said. Well, is there anything else you want to add about training? Anything you do for training that you want to mention that's unique or good story?
It's just training, man. It goes hard. That's what I do. I train my ass off to be the best, and that's what I'm going to do. Anybody that stands my way is going down.
And what kind of guys do you train with out there?
Huh?
What kind of guys do you train with out there? Is there any big names, people have been around some of the big circuits that you've worked with at all?
I train with it all, man. I got some of the best boxing guys up here. I got my main boxing coach is a Golden Glove, and I got some real good jiu-jitsu guys that I work with, a couple all-state wrestlers that I work with. I just try to change it up and bring in new trainers and new guys, you know, every fight. I just try to train with new people. That way I just evolve. That's the way I see it. I just bring in new people, so it's a different experience every time.
That's good. Sounds like you got all the bases covered. Is there anybody you want to give a shout out to or thank or anything like that?
My family, man, and my fans and everybody that supported me. Everybody that has my back. I love them all, you know. That's what I do it for.
Sweet. Well, it was great talking to you, and we definitely will be following your career, see where it takes you. We'll be putting out some stories about you, I'm sure, over the next few months, since we're working with Discipline on getting their name and everything associated with them out into the public eye. And we're also growing our site pretty big now, because we just went to a new server. We got some space to roam, so to speak, in the internet world. I do all the webmastering for the site too, so that's why I'm kind of excited about it. And we'll definitely try to get whatever video we can of you up there, and any stuff that you want to add about your training regimen and your experience. You know, feel free to email us and keep us updated. info@unlimitedfightnews.com or rich@unlimitedfightnews.com, or just put a comment on the website somewhere, and we'll be in touch for sure.
All right, man. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, definitely. And can't wait to see your pro debut now.
it's gonna be fireworks, man. It's going to be fireworks.
All right. Well, you have a good night.
Best of luck to you, all right?
Huh?
Best of luck to you in your pro debut. Go ahead, Duke. Come at us.
All right, I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
All right, well, Tyler, we'll talk to you later.
All right, sounds good, man.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
So that was Tyler Breeze, 5-3 as a manager, and Discipline.com sponsored fighter. Great stuff, good stories there, and had a little boxing angle for you, Tony.
Yes, it did.
We didn't hear from Daniel for the show. Daniel had blogged the Haitian Sensation, so we were waiting for the call, but I decided not to go trigger on that. We're on a roll with some other things, so get back to us. And we'll make sure that the third time is the charm with him, because this would be the third time we'll try to hook up for an interview with him. Anything else in the boxing world you wanted to talk about there, Tony?
Well, no, there's not really much going on that warrants much more discussion. One thing I did see that they are trying to, and this would actually be kind of interesting. I don't know if they came up with a date for it yet, maybe in the fall, but a fight between Paul Satafora, the Pittsburgh kid, undefeated, still undefeated, you know. He had that stint in prison, but he came back and he did good in a couple fights. And this thing was putting him in there with Eric Morales, who obviously just came out of retirement. And Spadafore, not much of a puncher. He's always more of a slip boxer. They even say back in his prime, he won the world title, I guess, was back around 99-ish. And then he held it for a couple years before he had that prison stint. But they said back in his prime, the sparring session, he put a whipping on Floyd Mayweather. Now, I don't know how true that is, but I mean, it's been reported by a couple relatively reliable sources. Kind of interesting. Spider Forrest has been a quick fastball, good boxer, good reflexes, and I think he would just, even as he's older now, he's never been much of a puncher anyway, he would just be way too much for Morales. I mean, Morales should not be anywhere near boxing ring anymore. I mean, his last few fights, I mean, okay, I think he had, that one fight where he came back and won a decision or something. I didn't see it. But still, keep that man out of the ring, I mean, for his own well-being.
Well, graduated on that. I'm just going to check the old boxing links here, see what else we've not talked about. Oh, the Manuel versus Marquez fight is going to be on the big screen again. Golden Boy Promotions and Marquez Boxing Promotions is going to put it on the national screens like they did the Mayweather Mosley fight, I think, was the last fight they did, the last Pacquiao fight. Wow. It's going to be on the big screen. And it's, let's see, it's the third cinematic boxing event in 2010, in the 2010 series. Sorry. Anyway, this is also a rematch of a fight of the year. So, if it's anything like the first one, it'll be worth watching in the theater. But rarely days are they anything like
the first one.
But anyway, I'm trying to find out here from the article where exactly these places are. Across the nation's largest digital entertainment network, NCM Media Networks, National Cinemedia. So if you know a National Cinemedia cinema near you, then you can see it. Even in the theater. So that's in the news for boxing. Of course, everybody's talking about Pacquiao versus Mayweather and what's going to happen. Here's an article Here's an article by Len Satterfield that says Manny Pacquiao came sets 2-week deadline for Floyd Mayweather. Did you hear this?
No.
David Haye calls James Toney delusional for taking the UFC fight. There's a story. We'll talk about that next. David Haye. Who the Haye is he? Anyway, let's go to the Pacquiao story here. Lem Satterfield, I wonder if he's related to the old boxer there. That movie was based on. Or not based on. Bob Satterfield. Come on. Manny Pacquiao came sets 2-week deadline for Floyd Mayweather. This is according to Len Satterfield, who is a boxing editor.
No. You ever get like a weird suspicion about something? And it's a weird feeling. I don't know what I was having on tonight, and I was thinking about this fight that everybody in the world would love to see. But do you know how damaging it would be for either guy if he lost? I mean, Pacquiao is a god in his own country. He is an absolute god. He can do no wrong. I mean, he's now in Congress. I mean, he's doing all this stuff. And then you got Mayweather. He's got the claim tonight. He's the best fighter of all time. You know, he's better than the Sugar Rays, Robinson and Leonard, better than Ali, better than Joe Lewis, better than all these guys. Well, imagine if this fight comes off. Gotta be a winner, gotta be a loser, unless you had a draw. But just imagine, okay, Pacquiao loses. That just crushes, you know, his aura, you know, when he's in his home country. I mean, He is not the god that everyone thinks he is. Well, imagine if Mayweather loses over that huge astronomical key that was just been deflated. When you have guys like Leonard and Hyder and Duran and, you know, Tommy Hearns, Ali Frazier, Milton, Foreman, Holm, all those guys, they made their names by fighting each other. It looked like these two guys are going to make their names by playing cat and mouse with each other, hoping the fight never comes off, then each can make a claim that the other guy ducked them.
And this is an interesting story. First of all, I would like to say that everything should be taken with a grain of salt, because apparently this all comes from Michael Conks, who we talked about in a few shows with the lead-in to the last big Pacquiao fight, where he was sleeping on Pacquiao's floor, and just like, it came out in the 24/7 series, even that he was having disagreements with people in Pacquiao's camp, and everybody thought he was kind of a scumbag. Anyway, I guess the guy is still with Pacquiao, and, you know, this guy is saying now that there are documents in the hands of the Mayweather camp. They include an agreement between top-ranking Golden Boy Promotions on Mayweather's demand for a random drug testing protocol and a tentative agreement 50-50 split of the purse, according to BoxingScene.com's Rick Reno. Conk said that Mayweather's camp has 2 weeks, whether it's July 13th or July 15th, it doesn't matter, but it's 2 weeks to sign and return the documents, indicating their acceptance of the terms. If Mayweather does not indicate his acceptance of the terms by then, get this, Tony, calm down, Pacquiao will begin negotiations with another opponent, likely either Miguel Cotto or Antonio Margarito.
Are you shitting me? Well, I would not go for either one of those fights. And here's why. First of all, how competitive was the first fight with KO? Pacquiao won. They went to the 12th round, and Pacquiao won easily. 10 or 11 of those 12 rounds, he absolutely demolished Cotto. I mean, demolished him. He turned him into a bloody pulp. And then, do you want to reward a guy like Margarito for basically, you know, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, because there's so much that's been unanswered about that whole situation. But the fact of the matter is, the guy had illegal tape on his hands. Who knows how many fights he had done that before. And he was actually taking into risk the lives and the livelihood of his opponent. Like, that's horrible. That's something I cannot accept and not reward. I mean, they did not give him a proper punishment. They gave him a suspension for a year. The guy had enough money from previous couple fights that he could live for a year without fighting. You know, easily. He could live for a couple years without fighting. They're going to reward this guy? This guy should be doing, you know, he should be paying shitloads of fines. He should be doing, you know, things that elevate the sport, not detract from it. His trainer should be down the, Panama Lewis route. Because, I mean, okay, I think the difference is that, you know, the guy like Miguel Cotto were able to come back and fight again, but Bill Collins, who fought Luis Restone, was injured, was never able to fight again and died, which is likely suicide or car accident. Not that that happened to Cotto. And then you come out and you find out Margarito's Glover tampered with an athlete. That's horrible. That's something I cannot accept and cannot really be rewarded for.
So the best...
It's hard for me to say that for a guy who shares my name like this.
Actually, so the best option now really is for Floyd to fight.
Absolutely, but I think both of these guys don't want to play cat and mouse with each other just for the fact that they are not as concerned about, you know, upping their legacy. I'm more concerned about tarnishing their legacy. I mean, a loss for either guy would just be absolutely devastating. And I don't think you guys are willing to risk that. I mean, a guy like Mayweather, okay, he was willing to risk it against Zubrozov, like Steve Moses, who I thought had a very good chance of beating him, but didn't. He was willing to risk it against an older, smaller fighter like, Juan Manuel Marquez, or, you know, a limited fighter like Ricky Hatton or a Pegasus private around Oscar De La Hoya. But I don't know if he's willing to risk anything about Manny Pacquiao, because a lot of people think Pacquiao is too dangerous. I think Pacquiao is a little bit worried about getting in with a guy that's such a superior boxer
and he, you know, like, maybe he can't bum rush him like some other guys and just pick him apart.
Right.
I think he's too worried about cementing his own legacy by avoiding each other.
Definitely want to see the fight. I think a lot of boxing fans want to see it. But my big question is, what then? You know, what else? What is the next big super fight after that? Big boxing gets in depth, you know? I mean, really. I like the idea that Juan Manuel Marquez versus Juan Diaz rematch, but I don't think that's going to get the pep we need for boxing. Not survive. We know it's going to survive, and we know it's going to be all right, but to really get back some of its mojo that it's lost over the years and some of its popularity. There's the toll. What are your final thoughts in 90 seconds, Tony? Go.
Well, my final thought is for anybody in the Philadelphia area. I hope you come out to the carnival this weekend to see me in the Tin Tank and Horsham, St. Catherine, Siena. I'm going to put on a good show. Keep watching boxing. Don't support Dana Lake. He's an asshole. And always support your boy, Tornado. Peace out. Call you next week.